This is unfortunate, but it's the truth. Being too nice to someone on a date can seriously cost you. And I'm not talking about picking up the check or an expensive dinner. This goes for everyone, too. Just because you're a man, doesn't mean you're safe. After months of trying online dating, I finally matched with someone that I felt comfortable meeting in person. Her name was Samantha, or just Sam. We've been talking on the phone for weeks, and I really liked her, so I was ready to take it to the next step. At first, I suggested we meet up somewhere casual, like a bar, since we both drank. Sam had a different idea. I previously told her that I lived alone, so she thought it would be a good idea if we had our date at my place. I was surprised. I could hardly believe she was comfortable being alone in the apartment of a man she'd never met. But she assured me that we had built up a level of trust that made it fine. In the back of my mind, though, it put up a red flag. Why wouldn't she want to meet somewhere public in case I turned out to be a creep? Why come straight to my place? Was she one of those girls that would never leave once she got in my bed? However, it was a small level of concern, and I wanted to be nice, so I invited her over for drinks. I said I'd order some food, and we could watch whatever she wanted. She said that sounded wonderful. That night, she came over around 7 p.m. She seemed modestly dressed at first, until I took her jacket at the door and saw the clothing underneath was quite revealing. I complimented her, but I thought it was a bit much for a first date. Despite that, I poured some wine and we started talking in the kitchen. Before long, we were nearly through the first bottle of wine, and Sam was already asking if I had anything stronger. I made sure to order our food before we switched to the hard liquor, not wanting to drink too much on an empty stomach. While we waited for the food, we moved to the couch. Despite offering her the pick of any show or movie she wanted, she let me decide. Flipping through all the options was a nice distraction, as Sam had become a bit overbearing. Sitting a little too close, never breaking eye contact, and frequently touching my shoulder. Things went on awkwardly like this for a while. The food arrived and we ate while the TV played in the background, but as soon as dinner was over, Sam made a move on me. It was very surprising, and honestly hard to resist, but I politely declined, saying I wanted to take things slow. Sam was visibly disappointed, and immediately pivoted to taking more shots. I went along with it, not wanting to shut her down twice in a row, though I was already a bit more drunk than I wanted to be. After another shot, Sam suddenly came up with another surprising idea. She suggested we both make each other a completely random drink with whatever we can find in the kitchen, but the other person has to go into a different room while it's being made, and no matter how bad it is, we both have to drink the whole thing. All my life, I've heard women telling each other to watch closely whenever a man makes them a drink, yet Sam had blind trust in me. I even made a crude joke that I could easily slip her something if I wanted to, but she laughed out loud, reminding me she had every opportunity to do the same. I laughed with her at the thought of that. So, we began. With me going first, Sam went to the bathroom while I threw together an abominable concoction of gin, Coke Zero, and bitters over ice. She absolutely hated it, but her reaction was hilarious. Then I went to the bathroom and waited for her to serve me her revenge. When I tried the drink she made, I almost gagged. There was such an awful taste that I could not place. Sam said it had sweet vermouth, salt, coffee liqueur, and white rum, all at room temperature. I regretted ever having a mixology phase and stocking my kitchen with so many ingredients. Since both drinks were so bad, we both agreed to just chug them. It was one of the most unpleasant experiences of my life, but I figured we were bonding over it. I was left with a bitter aftertaste in my mouth, still unsure which component of the drink introduced it. After a few minutes, I had a guess. Rapidly, my level of perceived drunkenness skyrocketed. My motor function was shot, my vision was fading, and I needed to lie down immediately. With my last remaining competence, I made Sam leave. She protested, saying she would stay and take care of me. But I basically pushed her out the door, telling her she did not want to see me in the state I was about to be in. Once Sam was gone, I rushed into the bathroom and forced myself to throw up. It's not something I'm good at, so it took me a while, and I didn't produce much, but I knew I needed to get whatever alcohol out of me that I could. By the time I called it quits, though, I started to doubt if alcohol was all that had done me in. I drank too much, but it never made me feel this way, this heaviness. I could barely crawl across the floor and climb into my bed. All I wanted to do was pass out, but I couldn't sleep. I had this deep primal fear that I was about to stop breathing, so I had to focus on it. Breathe in, breathe out. Soon, I realized I could no longer move the rest of my body. My eyes were stuck open, staring at the ceiling. I don't know how much time passed in that state, but at some point, someone re-entered the apartment. Sam. I was too messed up to remember to lock the door, and she just let herself back in. As she walked into my room, I used all my strength to reach out to beg for help. I think my arm moved, though I'm pretty sure the sound I made was pretty incomprehensible. She came over to the bed, but she didn't look concerned. Her expression was empty, with just a trace of anger. This wasn't the person I knew. This was some hollow thing staring at me, and they were not there to help. I heard her tell me she could kill me if she wanted to. Putting the edge of the small pocket knife up to my eye, she grazed my cheek with the pointed end, stopping at my throat. I tried to grab it, hit her, do something, but I couldn't. Whatever she had done to me, she had rendered me defenseless. She was right, too. She could have easily slit my throat and let me bleed out. I saw it in her eyes that she was thinking about it. She wanted to. Yet, for whatever reason, she put the knife away and walked away out of my view, not saying a word. I didn't know if she would come back. Part of me still hoped she would have a change of heart and help me, but I never saw her again. From then, I faded in and out of consciousness for a long time. It wasn't until morning that I could move again. When I got out of bed, my apartment was ransacked. I didn't hear or see any of it happening, but everything was gone. On top of losing thousands of dollars to the robbery and having my drink laced, what stung the most in the moment was knowing that this was the point. The entire time Sam and I were talking, throughout the whole evening we spent together, she never wanted me. Whether she succeeded in seducing me or had to go to Plan B like she did to incapacitate me, the plan was never to date me. The plan was always to rob me. That morning, I called the police, but by then, Sam had already disappeared like a ghost. Her name, profile, job, everything she had told me about herself was a lie. All they had was a physical description, and since she definitely left town, it was useless. Sam still hasn't been found, and at this point, I'm resigned to the fact that I will never receive closure or justice for what she did to me. This is how a first date turned into a nightmare. It started recently, at a packed house party in my freshman year of college. The music was loud and shitty, but the drinks were flowing freely. At some point, I found myself talking to this girl named Maddie. We were both sloshed and could barely hear each other, but then her friends ran off, leaving us alone. Without a second thought, she grabbed my hand and dragged me into a random bedroom. I had no idea who it belonged to, but I didn't care, as the next thing I knew, we were making out on the bed. Before we could take our clothes off and truly desecrate this stranger's bed, either they or the roommate barged in on us, started screaming at us, and chased us out of the house. In the chaos, I lost Maddie, but I'd already gotten her Instagram, so I knew I could find her. I was so drunk and deluded that I thought I'd found a modern-day Cinderella. That's corny as hell, I know. But believe me, I paid the price when I texted her that night saying I couldn't wait to see her again. 2 days later, I met Maddie at a kava bar and began regretting every decision I had made in the previous 72 hours. With a clear head, I quickly realized that Maddie was annoying, crazy, and not nearly cute enough to make up for it. The worst part was, she was already obsessed with me. For several hours, Maddie got absolutely wasted on Kratom and talked my ear off, while I sat there, bored, with no buzz. She then asked me to drive her home, which I pretty much had to. But then outside her apartment, she begged me to go inside with her. I knew whatever would happen between us in there wouldn't be good for her or look good on me, and I wasn't about to be that kind of guy. However, I wasn't exactly a gentleman either. I was so sick of her that I just yelled mean things at her until she got out of my car. Not my best moment, I know, but again, I paid the price. That night, I blocked Maddie, thinking I could just forget about her. It almost worked. But then I started seeing her around campus, just passing glances, though I was getting suspicious that she was following me. One day, I happened to be home alone at the big old house I'm renting with a handful of other guys. I was starting my day sometime around noon, eating cereal in the kitchen, when out of nowhere, the doorbell rang. Wondering who the hell it could be, I put a shirt on and opened the door. Nobody was there. But on the doorstep, there was a cocktail napkin weighed down by a piece of gravel from the driveway. The napkin had a note that said, "You forgot something," and next to it sat a mangled coffee stirrer. It took me a minute to realize what I was looking at. But then I reached into my memory and remembered the exact shape of that little stick and how it came to be that way. It was from my date with Maddie at the Kava Bar. I was so bored that I had been chewing on that stir stick that came with my drink long after I finished drinking that nasty shit. Why had she kept it? What was she doing with it for the past week? I didn't care to find out, but I knew she was probably still watching me from somewhere. So I flipped the middle finger to the sky, tossed the garbage into the yard, then went back inside. It bothered me that she knew where I lived, especially because I had no clue how she figured it out, other than she must have followed me all the way from class. To make matters worse, the house was far from secure. After hosting decades of college parties, the place was a wreck. There were probably a dozen ways in I didn't even know about, and I just had to hope Maddie wasn't resourceful enough to find a way in. Once again, I tried to ignore the situation until she found something better to do, but time only proved what kind of psycho I had on my hands. The next day, I was in an afternoon class. In the middle of the lecture, I felt my phone vibrate. I would have ignored it, but I just had this terrible feeling something was wrong. I was right. A random Instagram account texted me, "I know you're in class, but you should see this." Obviously, my first thought was Maddie. But what did she want me to see? The second link loaded in and I saw the video. My heart sank. It was me, naked in my bathroom, taking care of business on the toilet. I'm sure you can understand it was a bit more private than taking a piss. In that moment, whatever I was learning in class ceased to matter. I stood up and excused myself, leaving right away to go home and find the hidden camera. Inside the bathroom that I shared with my two roommates, I searched all over the cluttered mess that surrounded the sink. There were razors, toothbrushes, various tubes of creams and pastes, 5 different sticks of deodorant, and 10 empty vapes. But among the madness, a single nondescript Bluetooth speaker. It didn't belong to me, nor did I recognize it as anyone else's. It was in just the right spot to watch the toilet and the shower, and once I held a light up to it, I saw the hidden lens. Almost as soon as I discovered it, the same Instagram account messaged me again, telling me I had done a good job. But they had more footage of me and everyone else who used the bathroom, doing everything from washing their ass to snorting lines. If I told anyone about it, they would send it all to the local Barstool page. My head was spinning. Maddie had been in the house. She snuck in, planted the camera, and left without anyone noticing. It could have been when we were all sleeping, or when nobody was home, but either way, this was proof how far she was willing to go. I finally broke down. I begged and apologized to her new account, saying I would do anything to keep her from going public. I just wanted it to end. I waited for hours, but she never responded. When my roommates got home, I debated telling them about it, but in the end, I shut myself in my room and hid from them. I laid in bed with the hidden camera stuffed in a shoebox by my bedside, thinking of what else I could do. Slowly, the night wore on. Everyone either left for a party or went to sleep for class in the morning, leaving me the only person still awake. At last, my phone buzzed again. It was Maddie, from the new account. All she said was, "Can I come out now?" I didn't know what she meant, but then another message came through. A picture. Most of it was black, but a thin vertical bar of visibility ran down the center. In it, I could see the foot of my bed, with the lights on just like they were, right then and there. She was hiding in my closet. She had been in there all night. I panicked. I ran out of the bedroom and went down the hall to my roommate. I barged in and locked the door behind me. As he woke up and started yelling at me to get out, I told him to call the police because someone had broken into our house. I didn't tell him it was Maddie. I was worried he wouldn't understand the threat if he knew it was a girl. Thankfully, he listened But by the time the cops arrived, Maddie was gone. She slipped away like the snake she is. When I told the cops what had been happening, they asked if Maddie had some way of tracking me. I couldn't think of anything that night, but the next day, I searched everywhere until I finally found it. There was an AirTag underneath my passenger seat. She must have slipped it in there while I drove her home on our first date. That means she's been stalking me from the start. Ever since then, I've been waiting for the day she releases everything she has on me and my roommates as retaliation for calling the cops on her. But it's yet to happen. Not that it comforts me much, though. It just makes me think she isn't done with me yet.
A few weeks ago, I was seeing this guy I met on Hinge named Jeremy. We had been on 2 dates already that both went fine. For our third date, we planned to meet at a cafe in the downtown area. We figured we could talk there for a while, then if things went well, wander somewhere else to keep the night going. As I like to do, I arrived about 30 minutes early so I could get comfortable in the space. I was sitting outside waiting until Jeremy arrived to go and get my drink, knowing he'd like to pay for it. Then, our meeting time came, and he didn't show. 5 minutes later, I texted him, asking if he was running late. I got no response. 10 more minutes passed, and I started to get a bit upset, but I tried to be patient and not come off as pushy. However, it seemed like I must have been wearing my mood on my sleeve, as around the time Jeremy was officially an hour late, another man came up to my table and started making small talk. This new, strange man asked if I was ever planning to get coffee, admitting he had been outside and noticed me sitting alone for a while. I avoided him telling why I was there, but he could see it in my face that I had been stood up. Immediately, I began acting standoffish as defense. I ignored what he was saying and texted Jeremy. I mentioned there was another man talking to me, hoping it would make him want to act protective, or, at the very least, jealous, just enough to show his face. Instead, he finally replied, saying something had come up and he couldn't make it. He didn't even acknowledge what I said about the other man. I wasn't sure if he was just busy and didn't read my text fully. But then the strange man suggested something that made me rethink the entire situation. First, he told me his name, Alex, without asking, then offered to buy me a drink at the bar down the street. He said he wanted to cheer me up after getting abandoned by my date. I never told him I got stood up. Yet again, he assumed it with complete confidence. Not only that, but he suggested essentially the same plan to follow up the coffee shop that Jeremy and I had made. Almost like he knew. In an instant, I stopped believing in the coincidence. What, did Jeremy decide he didn't want me anymore, so he was trying to set me up with his friend? Hell no. I wasn't about to be passed off. Although I knew that was probably the best case scenario if I went with this Alex person. For all I knew, their plans for me went elsewhere, someplace I might never return from. I remained calm, maintaining a minimal level of conversation with Alex as I ordered myself an Uber and waited for it to arrive. It only took a few minutes, but it felt like forever. When it came, I rushed inside the car and told the driver to lock the doors and not let that man come with me. Thankfully, the driver reacted quickly and was glad to help me get away. Once I got home, I angrily shed all the nice clothes I put on, washed out all the fancy product I put in my hair, blocked Jeremy, and told myself I was never going on a date with a man I met online again. As soon as I laid down on my couch, I put on the TV, ready to relax and forget about him, only for someone to knock on my door and a familiar voice to violate my peace. Jeremy. For a moment, I almost forgot that I let him drive me home on our second date, but it was still extremely uncalled for him to show up unannounced, especially after what he did. He was banging on the door, shouting about how he was so sorry and the whole thing was a big misunderstanding. Pissed off, I cinched my bathrobe around my waist and then got up to shout back at him to go the hell away. I was loud and clear, yet he claimed he couldn't hear me, repeatedly asking me to open the door so we could talk. Yeah, right, I thought. I always loved having a little chain lock on my door, and it felt like the perfect moment to use it. I latched the chain in place and opened the door just the few inches the chain allowed. I stuck my face into the gap, ready to tell Jeremy to jump off a cliff. Then I realized he wasn't alone. There was a man next to him. Alex. He'd been just out of view through the peephole, but suddenly, he was ramming a pair of bolt cutters toward my face. I jerked my head back to avoid getting hit, but he wasn't aiming for me. He put the bolt cutters through the door and snapped the chains like a twig. I saw Jeremy bursting in, and there was only one thing I could do. I jammed my bare foot under the door, then put my whole weight onto it and slammed the deadbolt. At the last second, I managed to get the door shut and locked again, after exposing myself like an idiot. Both of them still tried to break through, shouting at me to open up, but they were a moment too late. When they realized there was no longer an easy way into my home, they disappeared. Physically, all I suffered was a broken toenail and a rough gash on my foot from the door. That little injury saved my life. Mentally, however, I was all over the place. My heart was beating out of my chest. I had come just milliseconds from living out my worst nightmare. I thought I had been so careful that whole time, but I let my guard down a few too many times, nearly earning myself a fate worse than death. These past few weeks, I've been hypervigilant, and even though I haven't seen those men since, I don't know if I will ever trust anyone ever again. The last time I took a chance on a blind date, it was a disaster. However, the date itself wasn't the worst part. One of my coworkers set me up with a friend of her boyfriend's friend, or something like that. The guy in question, a soft five by the name of Anthony, didn't do anything heinous while we were at dinner. But overall, the experience was awkward, uninteresting, and went on longer than it needed to. While I barely spoke, Anthony told me about all of his hobbies, most of which were gaming and internet-based. I only bring it up because at one point, he asked to see my phone so he could pull up some kind of app or website to show me. As this was near the end, I was mentally checked out. I didn't think much of it. And he only had my phone for about 30 seconds, but this will come up later. After dinner was finally over, we split the check. I declined his request to come to my place, and I told him I would not like to see him again. His forced, clumsy smile collapsed, but I got in my car before he could say anything further. When I got home, I was thoroughly disappointed. That was 2 hours of my life I would never get back. And of course, Anthony texted me. My coworker had traded our numbers when she set us up, but I only ever texted him to plan the date. Now, I was ignoring him. I figured he would give up after a while, though that didn't seem to be the case. He sent another text every few minutes for at least an hour. I wasn't reading any of them until I got annoyed enough to look. A lot of it was the typical rambling reject nonsense, but one comment stood out. Anthony texted me, quote, "I bet you're sitting on your couch eating ice cream like every other fat and lonely woman in this world." Aside from the misogynist overtones and general nastiness of what he said, it really hit home because, well, that's exactly what I was doing, sitting on my couch, eating ice cream out of the carton. It literally made me get up and put the ice cream away, but I kept telling myself it was just a lucky guess. Clichés exist for a reason, don't they? It wasn't my fault I played into one for a moment. I had a bad date, so I deserved a treat as a recompense. What I didn't deserve was some incel asshole making me feel worse for it. To put an end to Anthony's access to my feelings, I went to our text conversation to block him. But when I read the last thing he just sent me, I froze. He said, "It's a bit too late to put it away now, cow. You already ate half of it. There was no way that could be just another lucky guess." Somehow, somewhere, Anthony had to be seeing what I was doing. I looked around the house and inspected my phone. Had he followed me home, or did he infect my phone with some sort of spy app? I wasn't sure, but Anthony kept texting me, calling me stupid for not figuring it out. He was toying with me, though I knew he could take things further at any moment. In a panic, I rushed around, making sure everything was locked and closing all the blinds. I couldn't think of anything else to keep him out. He must have already seen me changing, using the bathroom, and lounging in the living room, like I had the house to myself. 5 minutes ago, I was annoyed that my roommates were out of town because I had nobody to complain to. Now, I was worried I might be attacked because they were gone. Anthony was reveling in it. He knew I was alone. He made sure to tell me how much he enjoyed seeing me frightened. He wasn't just a weirdo, but a sicko. And my own coworker set me up with him. Did they know he would do something like this? Finally, I decided I couldn't handle another word from him, and when I went to block his number, I saw what had been staring me in the face all night. Under Anthony's contact information was his location on Apple Maps. It was right on top of my house. I knew that if I had his location, he had mine too, and he was clearly taking advantage of it. I remembered when I let him hold my phone, and he must have secretly shared our locations then. I blocked his number, but the damage was already done. He knew where I lived. My roommates wouldn't be home for days, which gave him plenty of time to find a way in when I least expected it. Terrified, I called the police. They sent one officer out and took about 25 minutes to show up. The wait was excruciating. I had a feeling Anthony would get even madder and try something once I stopped sharing my location with him. Unfortunately, all the cop did was take a quick look around. Then he told me to keep my door locked and left. I was alone again. I wish I had packed a bag before he arrived, so I could have gotten in my car while he was here. But now I was trapped in my house too, too scared to step foot outside. Anthony was still out there. I was sure of it. All I could do was play perpetual defense. Even now, after I've talked about this to the coworker who introduced us to each other and asked her to tell Anthony to stay away from me, I don't think he is gone. The only difference is, now he is watching me quietly, not harassing me, like he's waiting for me to forget. People like him, they tend to get obsessed. They hold grudges and develop intricate fantasies over long periods of time, until they can't help themselves from acting them out. Even after my roommates got home, I still don't feel safe here anymore. Anthony probably saw how little the cops seemed to care, and I know that emboldened him. I just hope I don't end up on the news when he finally gets the nerve to do something.